Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, the 22nd of March, 2018. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down the names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. And let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is having two restorations coming up. One on Saturday, March 24th, and another on Monday, March 26th. Both of them start at 10 a.m. and go to 1 p.m. They'll be at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Rainy days continue, and hopefully there will be more coming. The flora and the fauna are loving it. Skunk odors have been floating through the evening night air, and festive mockingbirds and chickadees have begun to sing for a mate. We will continue our broom bashing area efforts throughout Quail Hollow. We'll see you there. Once again, that's Saturday, March 24th at 10 a.m., or Monday, March 26th at 10 a.m. Both of those go until 1. How to get to Quail Hollow? Go up Graham Hill Road out of Santa Cruz. When you come down into the light at Felton, turn right and go up East Ziante Road for a couple of miles. Turn left on Quail Hollow Road. A half a mile up on the right is the park entrance. They'll meet you in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands in Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, but if it gets particularly nasty, they'll call it a day. Remember, tools are provided, but bring your gloves and your water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or email her at redwoodrn, that's R-E-D-W-D-R-N, at pacbell.net. Or go to their website, www.cruzcnps.org, cruzcnps.org. And volunteers are needed for the Sycamore Grove cleanup on March 31st. Come join us on March 31st from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. for Cesar Chavez Day, and help give back to the land that provides us with our drinking water and our fish. The Sycamore Grove Cleanup Project aims to restore an area of public land along the San Lorenzo River near Highway 9. Restoring the sensitive riparian habitat will increase water quality in the river, therefore benefiting the wildlife that resides there. In addition, Sycamore Grove is directly upstream from the intakes for the City Water Department drinking water treatment plant on the San Lorenzo River. Restoring the area will also improve drinking water quality for the City of Santa Cruz residents. Under the guidance of Santa Cruz Park Rangers, volunteers will be picking up trash and removing it from the area. Gloves, trash grab sticks, and trash bags will be provided. The terrain is mostly flat but can be steep in some areas. Once again, that's March 31st from 9 a.m. to noon at Sycamore Grove. There are some requirements. You need to be 15 years of age or more, unless you have an adult with you, or 18 years or old. If you'd like to sign up, please go to www.scvolunteernow.org. That's scvolunteernow.org, and look for the Sycamore Grove cleanup. And the climbing camp will be taking place March 26th through April 1st. That's coming up next week. Cascadia Forest Defenders invites you to a week-long climbing camp. Spend time in the woods learning how to ascend and descend a static rope, traverse between trees, use a crossbow for tree entry, build and set a platform in a tree, block road blockades involving aerial structures, and much more. You need to RSVP to find out how to get there and to let them know you are coming because space is limited. Send an email to forestdefensenow@gmail.com. That's forestdefensenow@gmail.com or visit their webpage at www.forestdefensenow.com. Once again, March 26th through April 1st. You better get on that one. And Southeast Trans Andor Women's Action Camp taking place April 26th through the 29th in Western North Carolina. Local community organizers will be hosting a rural and urban direct action camp in so-called Asheville, North Carolina for April 26th through the 29th. Camp is open to all female, trans, trans women, trans men, gender queer, gender variant, two-spirited, agender, and otherwise non-cis male identifying people. Trans and Women's Action Camp is an approach to smashing patriarchy and opposing all forms of oppression through direct action, skill sharing, and mutual aid for the sake of individual and collective liberation for all. Their goal is to empower those of us who are systematically silenced and oppressed due to social constructed gender and racial inequalities, to have our voices be heard, and to bring together communities of resistance in spaces that consciously subvert the power dynamics we often experience in cis and male-dominated spaces. We hope to build power and amplify voices within our community, heal and strengthen our cultures of resistance. The camp is striving to prioritize the voices of Indigenous and Black activists and comrades, especially in the South. The relationship between environmental movements and transformative racial and transgender justice is crucial and something we will continue to discuss. The four-day camp will offer workshops and discussions on a wide range of topics, including urban and rural direct action, earth skills, art and activism, conflict resolution, botany, tree climbing, anti-fascist and anti-racist organizing, prisoner support, do-it-yourself medicine and first aid, herbalism, caucuses, and much more. The camp will be held on a piece of land in the mountains 30 minutes from Asheville. We have not yet disclosed the exact location for the sake of security. Once you receive a completed registration form, you will receive email updates on how to get to the camp. Parking is limited, so try to carpool if possible. They will be setting up a rideshare board to help folks coordinate. You need to plan for outside living that can get chilly and wet. To contact them, send an email to setwac@protonmail.com. That's setwac@protonmail.com. And you can also go to their blog page, setwac.blackblogs.org. That's setwac.blackblogs.org. And the last northern white male rhino has died. Scientists are looking into in vitro fertilization to save the subspecies. Sudan, the world's last remaining northern white rhino, has died at the Ol Paheta Conservancy in Kenya, pushing the species even closer to extinction after decades of poaching. Just two females of the subspecies remain alive today, Sudan's daughter and granddaughter. Sudan, the world's last remaining male northern white rhino, has died, pushing... I don't know why they repeated that sentence. Sudan was the last northern white rhino that was born in the wild. John Steskal of Dvor Kalov Zoo in the Czech Republic, where Sudan lived until 2009, told the AFP news agency his death is a cruel symbol of human disregard for nature, and it saddened everyone who knew him. Sudan was 45 years old when he died, the equivalent of 90 in human years. He had been struggling with declining health for several years and had recently suffered a series of infections. And here's your update from the field, from the Buffalo Field Campaign. In direct action, last Friday, two more people were arrested after attempting to halt Yellowstone from shipping wild buffalo to slaughter, the two men Wolf and Coyote. With a direct action collective wild buffalo defense locked down to three concrete-filled barrels in front of the gate to the access road that leads to the trap. They were released from jail on Monday. Their brave act stalled operations for 4 hours. Despite these courageous actions, along with overwhelming public opposition to the slaughter, Yellowstone continues to kill buffalo. That morning, Yellowstone officials were so determined to send buffalo to slaughter, the very gentle giants this country has entrusted with their care, that they destroyed sensitive habitat to create a road around the blockade so that the trucks could still get through. This begs the question, whom does Yellowstone serve? Certainly not the global public, including Montanans, who are largely opposed to the slaughter of the last wild buffalo. Yellowstone presses on with urgency, capturing and killing as many buffalo as they can so they can make the cattle lobby of Montana happy. Yellowstone betrays native buffalo cultures, the general public, their mission, the Organic Act, and most importantly, the buffalo. Not even in Yellowstone National Park is our national mammal safe. Perhaps in response to the embarrassment they feel from doing what they know is wrong and having their government operations interrupted again, Yellowstone treated the two men very aggressively and made shocking statements in defense of the slaughter, telling the protector, "These buffalo are going to die, and there's nothing you can do to stop it." Yellowstone has further retaliated by capturing more buffalo, bringing the total capture to nearly 800 individuals. Even though it's just a few weeks away from calving season, they still may not be done. Many of these buffalo are from the imperiled central herd, who even Yellowstone admits are in dire straits. The buffalo managers, Reed Manglers, have entered this winter with a goal of killing between 600 and 900 buffalo, have far exceeded this quota. Given the number of buffalo captured for slaughter and quarantine, along with the excessive hunting that took place along Yellowstone's boundary, more than 1,200 buffalo have been eliminated from the country's last wild migratory buffalo populations, which now hovers at fewer than 3,600. That doesn't even include natural winter mortality, which can also take a heavy toll. It is unknown how many remain in the central herd, who numbered a shocking 847 before this killing season began. Over 100 were killed by hunters in the Hebgen Basin. Aside from a few radio-collared females, none of the bison managers know how many of the buffalo killed in the Gardner Basin were from this highly endangered population. Yellowstone is acting in foolish haste to appease Montana's livestock industry, making excuses not backed by science, ecology, or public sentiment to wantonly destroy this sacred keystone species, who is a natural treasure and the last of their kind. Yellowstone's buffalo slaughter continues to be challenged from every direction, and pressure on them is increasing and will continue to do so until they quit being puppets for the Montana cowboys. The hunting seasons have finally ended, so some buffalo are enjoying a respite. Of the buffalo who do roam free, Buffalo Field Campaign Gardner patrols report that fewer and fewer are in the Gardner Basin. Spring is here and calving will be underway in just a few weeks. Buffalo are starting to move to their calving grounds. Northern herd buffalo are heading towards the Blacktail Plateau, while the surviving central herd buffalo are beginning to move into the Hebgen Basin. And from Biteback, we read in an anonymous report, windows have been smashed, car tires slashed, electronics devices stolen, and documents retrieved. In Humbucker Forest, the fight continues. RWE's NOG department has a business working for them. They have spent some time mapping the trees and where the bats, birds, and mice live to make it easier to kick them out of the forest before the cutting. The forest is their home, and we are not willing to allow it. Yesterday, we forcibly entered the cars to leave a polite note asking them to leave the animals alone. They came back today and parked in the same spot, hanging camera traps in the trees. After getting rid of the cameras, two cars were targeted and windows and mirrors were smashed. The tires were slashed and all documents in the location of the animals were retrieved and destroyed. GPS devices were also taken and destroyed. True animal liberation comes with a cost. We must destroy the teeth of capitalism. We will not allow the death of this forest and its animals for the profit of some. Leave the coal in the ground. Solidarity with Hamby 4, still locked up in prison. Signed, Animal Liberation Front. And in West Virginia, Peter's Mountain Blockade enters into its third week in this story from It's Going Down, as found on the Earthworks Newswire. Dateline March 19th. For 21 days, the tree sit on so-called Peter's Mountain has been occupying a section of land preventing the Mountain Valley Pipeline from felling trees where they plan to drill beneath the Appalachian Trail. They have faced blizzards and 60-mile-per-hour winds and have been greeted with massive community support. As of today, the sitters risk extraction attempts on multiple legal grounds. On February 26th, Forest Service police informed the tree sitters they had 21 days to remain in their sits based on federal legislation that places limits on a campsite. The Forest Service proceeded to enforce an enclosure of the easement, the access road, and 200 feet surrounding the access road. The sitters have remained strong and active in the enclosure. The question of jurisdiction and enforcement remains convoluted. Initially, Monroe County Sheriff, Virginia State Police, West Virginia State Police, and Forest Service officers arrived at the sits in tandem and as independent entities. Some officers have appeared one day dressed as state police and the next as Forest Service, toting body cams and bulletproof vests, begging the question if Forest Service is deputizing state police. Tuesday, March 20th is the rehearing for the case Mountain Valley Pipeline LLC brought against the sitters. Judge Irons of West Virginia first heard the case on March 13 and granted a temporary restraining order against two named individuals and the still unidentified tree sitters John Doe 1 through 5. Irons further granted Mountain Valley Pipeline a preliminary injunction pending the company's submission of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's notice to proceed for West Virginia. At the initial hearing, the company showed up in court with paperwork for the wrong state. Iron also ruled Mountain Valley Pipeline must pay a $10,000 bond to the West Virginia State Police. The hearing tomorrow may determine that the sites are not within West Virginia state jurisdiction, but rather national forest land, causing a refund of the bond to MVP and further action of the Forest Service alone. We challenge that MVP LLC planned their borehole site within the National Forest Service's 300-foot no-cut zone on either side of the Appalachian Trail. The rehearing will evaluate the distance from the sits to the trail. If it is determined the tree stand is within the protected zone, the sitters may have some degree of immunity from the company's actions during a re-permitting process. Facing off in the courtroom is clearly an institutional tactic within a fundamentally toxic system of law and business. We proceed with this step again as one of many tactics in the fight to stop the Mountain Valley Pipeline and deepen resistance in this region. We have only strengthened in our commitment to direct action and are inspired and grateful for everyone's support and the solidarity from around the region. While we remain unsure of what state agents will be tasked with extraction, the Peters Mountain blockade is staying vigilant and steadfast in our determination to stop these and all pipelines. In this fight, we continue to center stolen land and resistance of settler colonialism in rural areas. Support of all kinds is needed to stop the Mountain Valley Pipeline. We always welcome Appalachian Trail hikers and friendly visitors. For folks interested in joining us on the front lines, please contact Peters Mountain Stand at protonmail.com. That's Peters Mountain Stand at protonmail.com. And in Canada, the Kinder Morgan pipeline protest grows. Arrests include a Greenpeace founder, a Juno-nominated grandfather in this story by Andy Roll of EcoWatch, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Just because you get older doesn't mean you cannot stop taking action for what you believe in. On Monday was a case of point. Two 70-year-olds still putting their bodies on the line for environmental justice and indigenous rights. In early Monday morning, the first 70-year-old, a grandfather of two and former nominee for Canada's Juno Musical Award, slipped into Kinder Morgan's compound at one of its sites for the controversial Trans Mountain Pipeline, scaled a tree, and erected a mid-air platform with a hammock up in the tree. Terry Christensen had taken food and water with him and says he has no intention of coming down. His nonviolent direct action was in protest of Kinder Morgan's tree clearing through Burnaby Mountain for the company's highly contentious pipeline to the BC coast. It was part of a week of direct action designed to slow construction and clearing that has to be undertaken by the company before March 26th, when migratory birds start flying north for the summer. Terry Christensen outlined why he was taking action. This pipeline does not have the consent of the indigenous nations' land through it would pass. It would endanger the livelihoods and economies of all those that depend on an oil-free coast, and I, for one, won't stand by and let that happen. I'm taking this action to protect my grandchildren's future. I care about this land, this coast, and it won't be destroyed. Also, a Texas oil company can increase their profit share. We are all in this fight together, Christensen added. We have better options to produce energy and move people around than building another dirty pipeline, and the world's scientific community has said we need to move away from it anyway. It's prime time. The Prime Minister got that message, and I'll be doing my best to hang out here until he's done. Unfortunately, Christensen was arrested at around 8 p.m. that night. Was not the only one arrested. 15 more people were arrested by blocking the gates to Kinder Morgan's compound. This brings the total of about 50 people have been arrested in the past few days, with opposition to the pipeline growing daily. Yesterday, one of the first to be arrested at the gates was another 70-year-old Rex Weiler, who co-founded Greenpeace International in 1979 and is one of the founders of the Hollyhock Retreat Center in British Columbia. And thanks to you, Congress has backed off on efforts to erase protections for wolves and gut the Endangered Species Act in this story from Environmental Action. We have great news. Congress heard you loud and clear, and federal protections for wolves and other wildlife are no longer on the chopping block. Congress has released its omnibus spending bill and taken out the anti-wildlife riders that would have erased protections for wolves and gutted the Endangered Species Act. There were some of the most dangerous anti-wildlife proposals we've ever seen. To everyone who called Congress and the tens of thousands of you who emailed your senators, thank you for stepping up and taking environmental action. You made this victory possible. The proposed anti-wildlife riders would have erased protections for gray wolves around the Great Lakes, opening the door to hunting and trapping them by the hundreds. Other riders would have declared red wolves extinct, ending a crucial recovery program and gutting the Endangered Species Act by erasing protections for more than 900 species. And an endangered Sumatran tiger falls victim to a brutal killing spree. In this story written by Reuters staff from Reuters, a critically endangered Sumatran tiger was brutally killed in Indonesia last Sunday, the latest victim of a killing spree targeting near-extinct species that has alarmed conservationists. Authorities have in recent months found a number of killed animals, including endangered Borneo orangutans, after conflicts with farmers or plantation workers. Activists said the tiger had been roaming Mandaling Natal village in northern Sumatra for over a month and had injured one person, prompting residents to call on rangers to kill it. We explained to the villagers that the tiger is an endangered animal, but they didn't like our way of handling the situation, said Hatmali Santuri of the Natural Resources Conservation Agency, adding a trap had been used to try and capture the cat. We regret that they killed the tiger. We will prove its body parts are being traded, she added. An investigation showed it had several parts missing, including its canine teeth, claws, and skin off its face and tail. These body parts may be used in traditional medicines or sold as artifacts. A representative of the village community was not available for comment. There are only around 400 Sumatran tigers left in the world, meaning it is on the brink of extinction, according to the World Wildlife Fund. Police on Borneo Island arrested at least two people in separate incidents this year in which an orangutan had been decapitated and another had been shot more than 130 times with an air rifle. Reporting on this story was by Jessica Damiana, with further writing by Kanu Priya Kapoor and editing by Nick McPhee. And the world's largest ivory burn delivered a strong message, but who received it? Media coverage of the torching of huge caches of ivory presented a strong message against elephant poaching and ivory trade, but many of those who needed to hear it most may not have received it, an international study has found. University of Queensland researcher Alexander Brakowski said an examination of the global media coverage of the world's largest ivory burn in Kenya in 2016 revealed that coverage disproportionately reached Western audiences. Mr. Brakowski of the UQ's School of Earth and Environment Sciences said the study was the first to assess the potential impact of the destruction of more than 105 tons of ivory worth more than $100 million. Our study found 81% of the online media coverage was produced in the United States, which has few elephant poachers and few consumers of illegally sourced ivory, Mr. Brakowski said. Both print and online media coverage was weaker in ivory-consuming countries such as China, and 59% of Chinese coverage was in English, which may not have reached all target audiences. The UQ School of Biological Sciences and Griffin University researcher Dr. Duan Biggs said, "With no real measure of the effectiveness of these conservation marketing events, there is no way of judging how they will achieve their objectives of reducing ivory demand and supporting elephant conservation. If ivory consumers, poachers, dealers, and policymakers were the intended audiences, then a strategy of sustained media pressure to extend news coverage to weeks and months may have been better to affect the change." And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can hear a rebroadcast tomorrow, Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday programming. You can also listen to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning. And coming up, broadcast on KBOG 97.9 in Bandon, Oregon, Fridays at 10 a.m. KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m. And WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. You can also listen to KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill and Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, and KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California. All those stations broadcast the Earth First Update. Check their website for day and time. Or you could always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous Earth First Update anytime you want to. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening and invite you to tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.